you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast featuring Phil Perry. Phil, let's do some niceties here at the top. How you doing, guy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Let's get after it. Patriots make it official with their hire of Bill O'Brien. They release an announcement. They are heading to Vegas. Ian Rappaport this morning, we've been giving some focus to the Shrine Bowl on our shows in recent days as the Patriots coaching staff heads out to the Shrine Bowl to coach Bill O'Brien, Gerard Mayo, Bill Belichick, Steve Belichick, and Joe Judge are in supervisory roles, according to Ian Rappaport. Otherwise, it's a cauldron of fire for all the coaches to get in there and fight it out and show who's a good coach this year.
The most interesting part of this is that Joe Judge is included on the coaches headed out to Vegas, and Matt Patricia is not. So that, to me, is interesting. There were a lot of questions going into this week, Tom, I know. People in the building wondering what the future would hold for both of those guys. You know, I know there was a feeling in the building, again, going into this week, that Matt Patricia would not be with the team in 2023. That hadn't yet been communicated to anyone, but that was the feeling in the building there in Foxborough. And Joe Judge, there were questions there as well. Would he be moving back to special teams and maybe working with Cam Accord? It's my understanding Cam Accord will be with the team in 2023, and he's making the trip out to Vegas for the Shrine Bowl as well. You know, would Bill Belichick ask Joe Judge to go back to special teams? Would Joe Judge even want to do that after being a head coach and a quarterback's coach, trying to get back on that head coaching track?
Right.
That'd be a good move for him, something that he would be interested in. So,
I mean, did Jack on that?
How those two guys are factored in.
They'd reject on Joe Judge resisting any notions of taking a job that doesn't match the track that he would like to be on. And I don't know that to be the case, but where does he get off? Where would he get off not wanting to do that? He was a special teams coach and a wide receivers coach. He got hired by the Giants, who were in competition with Mississippi State. The Patriots let him go and interview back in 2018, 2019, whatever it was. He gets that job. He proceeds to not have two bad years with the Giants. And then he comes back to New England and he serves as a quarterback's coach. And what we're going to detail straight ahead is a Herald article that talks all about the offensive coaching staff, Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, and kind of has Joe Judge in the crosshairs. So I just don't think he's in a position to be able to dictate, oh, that's beneath me, I'm not going to do it.
Well, maybe that's why he's headed out to Vegas with the team. I mean, maybe he's understood that too. And Bill Belichick, you know, I think Bill Belichick respects both those guys enough, Patricia and Judge, to find something for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're Joe Judge, you're saying, hey, I'm 2 years removed from being a head coach. You know, I've coached on offense. It's a step backward for me, right? I'm, you know, if I'm Joe Judge and I'm projecting now, if I'm Joe Judge and I'm still getting paid by the Giants, would it not be better for me to just take the year off? As opposed to going back and, you know, maybe being labeled as a special teams guy for the rest of my career, if I'm not interested in that. Yeah, you know, I don't know. So yeah. That to me would be, you know, the decision on the table maybe for him.
I would also think that it's somewhat unrealistic for some guys who lose their head coaching jobs to feel as if they're going to secure another one. Some guys are there for 3-4 years, things don't go well, and then they're back and they have another opportunity. Other guys crash and burn. And it never happens again. I don't think Nathaniel Hackett's going to get rehired anytime soon by anybody. And I think Joe Judge might find the same thing unless he ends up with the greatest special teams performances in NFL history somehow. But Cam Akewood had a really good special teams year in 2020 himself. All of that serves as prologue to a really well-done story by Karen Garigian and Andrew Callahan in the Boston Herald detailing a lot of what we all observed as media folks, as what fans observed with the Patriots in 2022. And a lot of it was at the root. The story focuses on the root issue, which was the Patriots pivoting offense. And I'm going to get into some of the quotes here that stood out to me in this very long and again, well-reported story. There's not a lot here that doesn't explain what we were intimating and relating throughout the season in terms of the dysfunction, the frustration, the agitation. But there's quotes to it, and there's some more fleshing out of the details. You know, at the top of the story, we hear have some quotes from different sources, all of whom are unnamed, but having Phil and I speak to both, plenty of sources, echoes what the states we've heard. "I've never seen anything like it," was one quote. Quote, "It was disheveled. It was always scrambling to get things done." Also, quote, "It's always been about winning and doing what's best for the team. And I really believe Belichick, when he says that, I just think he really didn't understand how hard it was going to be," end quote. That's something I've mentioned a few times. He totally underestimated how hard it'd be and overestimated how well they'd do. Finally, another source says, "I love Coach Belichick, but he effed us." So, Phil, you have all that as a backdrop, and then it just details really early on in the story the scheme and the scheme pivot and the idea that the Patriots wanted to pivot to a little bit of what Josh left behind and what Sean McVay was running with the Rams, emphasizing outside zone runs, and just how difficult it was during the offseason for the Patriots to get this stuff installed.
Yeah, and I think that difficulty highlighted what I think this story that Andrew and Karen did a great job of putting together really focuses in on, which is a loss of buy-in.
Yes.
There was no buy-in.
You distilled it.
We talked about it early in the season that this was the risk that Bill Belichick was taking. This is something Bill Belichick values. This is something that, if this doesn't go right, could evaporate on him, even for Bill Belichick, greatest head coach of all time. Even if the players in that locker room feel that way about Bill Belichick, if he's not the one putting together every nuance of every offensive game plan and in every meeting room, whether it's the quarterbacks or the offensive line or the offense in general, if you don't have buy-in for those generals that you've appointed in Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, the buy-in can go up in smoke. And so the quote, Tom, to me in this story that spells that out very clearly was, I believe it was in the section that talked about the first Bills game in the regular season, where they had this incredibly conservative attack. And someone's quoted in the story as saying something along the lines of, and I should pull up the exact quote here. So the quote that stood out to me, kind of boiling this buy-in point down, is in the story where it says, one source asked, quote, "Sometimes I would wonder, like, are we trying to screw this up on purpose?" Close quote. And Tom, if you feel that way going into a week or in the middle of a season, in my opinion, you might as well not even show up, because it's going to be very, very difficult for you to win games with that floating around in your head.
It's funny too. And I'm sure people are sitting there saying, well, why does this matter? They just hired Bill O'Brien. Obviously it didn't work. And it was a misstep. So let's just wash our hands of it. To me, I think it's better to have it down on paper, explaining in a timeline with quotes relative to those times, even as we chronicled it as it went along, why the trust was lost, why the decision made didn't stand up. And I think they do an excellent job of distilling that and boiling it down. So starting back as they started implementing the offense, it said the results were disastrous in trying to install this offense. Over time, the staff tossed most of the play-action passes, that pivot, while necessary, further alarmed those who felt concerned about the reduced volume of plays, which is what Kendrick Bourne referred to when he was speaking to Mike Reese last spring and what you referred to. They want to play faster. They want to be quicker. They want to be able to get to the line of scrimmage and run things. Under McDaniels, back to the story, involving the installation of 25 pages worth of fresh run plays was normal during training camp. another 25 passing plays, and upwards of 40 pages for the offensive line learning protection schemes. And that was a typical training camp practice. Now, install doesn't mean you're learning from scratch. It means you're re-repping it. Everyone gets it. They just walk through it. Back to the story. Under Patricia and Judge, those numbers were cut roughly by half. A lot of guys were getting worried, is a quote from a source, because when we were in the middle of camp, we were wondering what the plan was for our offense because we hadn't put enough install in. We had a couple protections, a couple of core run plays, but our pass game didn't have much in it. Here's an interesting aspect, too, and this is where you end up getting some of the evidence seen by Kendrick Bourne and Joe and Matt Patricia perhaps getting sideways. Back to the story. None of the assistants had coached a Shanahan-style offense before. Me paraphrasing now, so the guys started getting pissed off. And here's a quote. A lot of guys would ask, well, what's going to happen if the defense does this? And you would see that they really hadn't accounted for that yet. And they'd say, we'll get to that when we get to that. That type of attitude got us in trouble. And that, to me, isn't just being over your head, Phil. It's being, we got it. Don't question us. We understand what's going on. And it also, one quick thing, it also mentions how you're reporting on the Patriots reorganizing their pass protection from a numbers-based to a word-based system. The rules created confusion among the offensive linemen and put Jones under a daily barrage of pressure, and you began to see it as the season and training camp went along. It was a jailbreak some days because of all this stuff, and then all of a sudden you got your second-year quarterback wondering where the torpedo's coming from that's aimed directly at his head. Bill, your ball.
Well, and it started early, right? I mean, we could see in training camp the free runners, and Mac Jones talked about openly the free runners. Hey, we just got to make sure we limit the free runners.
The free runners. And I forgot about the free runners.
You're in no danger of being hit in those situations, remember, right?
Oh. Remember the story you told about Mac Wilson? Just tell the Mac Wilson story again.
It's sort of hazy for me now, but I remember, I think it was a red zone period where Mac Wilson just walked, like he just walked through the middle of the line with his hands up because he knew he couldn't hit the quarterback. And he probably, you know, we'd probably get an earful if he blew up the offensive play so that they couldn't run the rep. But the protection was so blown from the jump that he just walked right through the middle of the line with his hands up. Like, is anybody going to even acknowledge me here?
These are valuable training camp reps.
Well, and Tom, it got to, so you get to week one, right? Your first chance of, you know, outside of the preseason, your first chance of the quarterback really getting hit. And what happened week one? Mac Jones left with a back injury. And they couldn't handle the all-out pressure looks that they knew they were going to get from Miami, that they did get from Miami, because that's Josh Boyer, former defensive coordinator for the Dolphins. That was his MO. And I was told basically what happened after that game was it became clear to everybody that Matt Patricia couldn't coach the offensive line and be the de facto offense coordinator and call the plays. And so it was after that game that Billy Yates was full-time brought down to the sideline. Remember, he had been up in the press box for the first halves of games. It happened in that week one game. Mm-hmm. And it happened in the preseason as well. And he was essentially given the responsibilities of being the offensive line coach. But the fact that they got that far into it and that they almost lost the quarterback to a back injury because they didn't know going into that game that Matt Patricia couldn't handle all of those things, it's pretty damning. And it's just another example of how not just Bill Belichick, but the entire coaching staff this past season was spread thin. And that was something that was very apparent to players early on too. It was like a family run restaurant that had, you know, that tried to, you know, create multiple franchises across a wide swath of the region. And yep, all of a sudden the product, you know, loses its luster. Well, why? Well,
how hard could it be?
You have too many jobs for not enough people.
Yeah. And the idea of how hard can it be? We did it once. We'll do it here too. And what's interesting is we talked about the timetable and Bill referencing the timetable and stay patient. Might take a while. You can see that as the season goes along, they're trying to get the numbers base to try to get the run base. But it's interesting to see how Andrew and Karen do a nice job of pointing out the run pass schemes. They're so far behind in the run game and they're so far behind in marrying what is pivotal in that Shanahan scheme, which is you run stretch, you run stretch, you run stretch, and then you run a bootleg off of it. It shows a glaring issue, or it says, a glaring issue was the disconnect between the run and pass schemes. According to Sports Info Solutions, the Patriots called 83 outside zone or stretch run plays during the regular season compared to a league-low 5 bootleg and play-action passes, the most common and complementary passing scheme off of those runs. In other words, they never implemented the crossers that come downfield off of the bootleg so you can throw those things. The stuff that Shanahan implemented, where you would see Jake Plummer. Well, who's the other guy? His name begins with a Kyle Orton. They would run these plays, and you would either see Rod Smith or Brandon Marshall, or you name the Denver Broncos receiver on a cross, catching it 20 yards downfield with no one around him because they had set it up with the stretch run play. The Patriots never married that up. They went into the season without having done that.
And Tom, the other thing that I thought they did a good job of pointing out was the lack of answers. And that's something that in conversations that I've had since the season has ended, that was really, when it comes to the X's and O's, that was, I think, the biggest issue was they would go into games understanding that they weren't prepared for certain defensive looks. And, you know, the way that Andrew and Karen lay it out, you know, it was especially these players that had been in these West Coast systems before that said, well, what if the defense does this? Then how do we respond to that? And you get the, well, we'll get to that when we get to it. But that went on really all year. And that just was, I think, very apparent. Again, these guys are professional athletes. They played at high levels in the college ranks for the most part. They understood what it was to be working for a good offensive coordinator and a good offensive coaching staff. And the fact that they were going into games knowing that they didn't have the answers to the test, I think that makes an already incredibly difficult job, which is just executing when you do have the answers in a game situation. It makes it impossible. And so again, how you could be bought in when that is the system that you're trying to function within, I don't know how you could. I think it was really difficult for team leadership because I don't think, you know, some of these quotes, listen, I think they are indicative of a feeling in the locker room. I don't think it's necessarily universal when it comes to like some of the sentiments on Bill Belichick. That's not at least what I've been told. You know, this is viewed as a Patricia and Judge problem. And yes, you know, Bill Belichick put them in those roles, no question. But I think there's still a lot of respect for Bill Belichick. So I don't think this thing is completely irreparably broken moving forward, Tom.
In terms of the trust issue.
In terms of the trust with Bill, you know, I think if Joe Judge is still around and he's in a real important role offensively, that to me would be a problem. But if it's Bill Belichick and he hands the offense to Bill O'Brien, I think you've got two guys there that would have a lot of trust right off the bat.
I think the upshot of all that too is Bill did those guys a massive, massive disservice. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're going to focus in on the Joe Judge portion of the program right now, where this is what Karen and Andrew wrote. Around early October, when Jones was sidelined by a high ankle sprain, players began to see less of his position coaches in meetings. Judge, they later suspected, was in a process of being phased out. It was a stark change from training camp when Judge would command meetings and share the play call sheet in team periods with Patricia and Belichick. Judge also coached across positions in practice, forcing other assistants to occasionally correct his talking points to players during drills. Quote, "I think there were times coaches were frustrated, especially the ones who had been on staff in years past, and know what we had done. As Patricia came under fire outside as the face of the offense, Judge drew increasing criticism from within. Belichick would blast him in practice, and it wasn't uncommon for Judge and Jones to trade profanity-laced outbursts. Jones' trust in his position coach was effectively non-existent. Quote, Mac didn't like him. Not all. Judge would, here's another quote, Judge would speak extra loudly in meetings, trying to project that he was the guy, and I think that kind of people rubbed people the wrong way. A lot of people were frustrated with Judge. Prior to the season, look, in 2019, in the Patriots' year when Judge was their wide receivers coach, I related a story in which there was a player who got so frustrated with Judge and basically said to him, look, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know how to coach wide receivers. And that caused a dust up, and the player got some disciplining for it. I also had it related to me by someone in the league that, look, Joe is a good coach and a good guy, but he has a tendency to overpromise. And he has such a swagger about him that you're convinced that he's got it down. And then you go to the situation that he's supposed to be working on. You're like, they're not ready. So as much as I have enjoyed my interpersonal world contacts with Joe Judge, I think there is an exuberance and a confidence and a swagger that doesn't match up with the level of performance that he gives you as a coach, plainly speaking. And that's where he ended up forfeiting the trust of Mac Jones. If you got a lot of bluster, you better be able to bring some substance to Phil.
And a willingness to, you know, collaborate, I think. You know, there's just, it seems as though from this story, you know, that players would try to work their way into the conversation and suggest things and ask questions. And I'm not sure how those were all received. And I think, again, all of this started early. I come back to buy-in, and I come back to it all starting early, Tom. I mean, I remember writing about, you know, when we were focused on sideline interactions, and you can scoff at that if you want, but I think it was a pretty good indication of what was going on with the team and how people were feeling about each other early in the year. In Vegas, during the preseason game, where Mac Jones came off the field at one point, ripped the play sheet off of his wrist and spiked it on the ground. And then as soon as, you know, Joe Judge waltzed over to try to sit down next to Mac Jones, he basically, without saying it, I don't think there was a single word exchanged, but he just got up and started pacing the sidelines. Like, he needed some space. And he even, you know, I think publicly at one point, reference that we're still trying to figure out, you know, the timing of how things should work on the sideline. And, you know, there are times where, you know, I'm not really ready to talk to anybody right away. And, you know, there was some early clashing of personalities. I think it's safe to say that it didn't look like it got all that cleared up over the course of the season.
And that goes back to the why of it. You know, why that Mac would plead for. Why are we doing this? Because he was trying to in my estimation, look, I got no real insight with Mac. I've had maybe two or three friendly conversations the last 47 seconds each in the locker room with him. But I think that he was respecting the process and the leadership by trying to prod gently with why. Can you tell me why? That would maybe if we get to that essence of why are we doing this, we can jumpstart where we're going to end up running aground. And there was frustration because he wasn't getting the why. And I think that the coaches, perhaps Judge and maybe to an extent Patricia, found that as undercutting, found it as sniveling, found it, as we've seen reported a couple weeks ago, it's kind of quieted down, but Mac did this and Mac did that and Mac wasn't. And I really believe that that emanated from coaches who felt like they were undercut by Mac's outward lack of trust in them, that we could visibly see their frustration. And their way to strike back at Mac after the season was to feed into the notion that, well, Mac wasn't perfect either. And to me, it's just so friggin' dysfunctional, because people, Judge and Patricia, want to get back to being head coaches. Bill put them in a shit position of leadership roles that they weren't prepared for. And then not only did they probably realize it themselves, they also got shown up by a snot-nosed, privileged little quarterback with big ears who made them look stupid on the regular. So I'm just laying out how the it just wasn't gonna work, Phil.
And I think to assume that, I just think to assume that it would have, Tom, is just it really, it's just fascinating that Bill Belichick would try, because there's so many people around all these players. There's so much information out there available on all these coaches and their backgrounds and their histories. And Bill Belichick can get to the front of the room and say, I trust these guys. These are great coaches. These are smart people. They'll do a great job. And that goes a long way. I'm telling you, that goes a long way. And so, to your point, I think players were willing, with some reservation, because of what they're hearing from the people around them, because of what they read online. Wait, this guy's never coached quarterbacks in his life? This guy hasn't coached on the offensive side since he was a very low-level assistant for Dante Scarnecchia 20 years ago almost? This might not be a great idea, but then you get the greatest coach of all time at the front of the room and telling you that it is a good idea, and you're willing to go with it and try to make it work. But when there's so much information out on these people that would suggest that they can't help you get better as a player, it gets really hard to ignore that. It's just for Bill Belichick to assume that that stuff would all get swept away because he gave these guys their blessing, I think was a misstep.
Yeah. And I guess it's what can happen when you've been to 13 AFC championships and 9 Super Bowls and won 7 of them. No, that's Brady won the 7. Whatever. 6 of them. Hey, trust me, don't trust me. This is what we're doing. Suck it. That's what you end up with. But hey, just like today on this Thursday in late January, the clouds have parted and I see sunny skies. A glass of water is nice, Phil, on any hot day. But after you've crawled through sand from April through January, in blazing sun, and somebody offers you a glass of water, it's even more delicious. That's what I'm driving at with Bill O'Brien. He is the simple answer, but the most delicious answer for the Patriots because of what they went through. I mean, it's great psyops by Bill.
Well, and talk about somebody who's going to have answers, right? He will provide his offense a toolbox from which to pull a variety of different answers when they get to the line of scrimmage or during the week when they're talking about different pressures that their opponent that week has shown that they will deploy from time to time. Having those alerts, those checks, and not just the simple ones. Like, I don't want to say that Mac Jones never altered a play at the line of scrimmage this past year, because he did, right? You know, usually the run check is, you know, you're running away from a pressure, or a passing check might be, okay, we thought we might get man, but let's check to our zone play because they're clearly in zone here. That was, it's my understanding, sort of the extent of the alerts and the checks. You see Mac Jones point to the helmet, alert, alert. And you see from the receivers, if they're all on the same page, pointing to it too. Okay, we got it. You need more than that though. And I think they will get that with Bill O'Brien, and they'll feel more confident at the line of scrimmage, but maybe even more importantly, Tom, more confident going into games about their plan. And I think that could really be sort of a multiplier in terms of overall efficiency for them on that side of the ball.
And not just that, it's a multiplier in terms of attitude. It's a multiplier in terms of optimism. Feeling as if you're showing up to camp with few questions. Look, 2021, the team had a good year. That team did hit the ground running. You did see Kendrick Bourne have an outstanding camp and Mac Jones win the job after working his ass off to do it. But that team came in with a lot of questions and had a shit ton to sort through as it came into that season. 2022 was an absolute wasted, lost year. I mean, quite frankly, there was about $30 million worth of salary that was had a flamethrower taken to it because of this. But this year, they're going to show up with optimism. They're going to have players who know the system and understand the system, whether it's Jonnu Smith, whether it's Kendrick Bourne, all of these players who nothing was extracted from, whose performances did not match their contracts, you can get into it now and try and figure it out. And that's why I think that this season can have a huge bump and a huge jump. And there's not a lot that the team has to do aside from Bill O'Brien. Yeah, there's obviously plenty of tweaking to be done. But this is going to end up having retro rockets because the steps back taken, they're going to get back to where they were really quickly to 2021 just by inserting Bill, I think. Am I overly optimistic with this?
I really don't think so. You know, I think that that even will happen before you see anything happen with, for example, you know, Mac Jones's mechanics, right? Like he'll have an experienced quarterbacks coach for the first time in a year, which I think could help him eventually. But I think the first thing you'll see is just, it sounds very basic, but better coordination of what they're doing offensively, guys not running into each other, pass drops matching up with route concepts. Those are the kinds of things that very quickly could make a real impact. So that's what we should expect to see. And if we don't, and if the conversation starts to shift towards, well, you know, is this just too much change? Is three leaders offensively in 3 years just too much, even though it is an experienced guy? I think if we get there, Tom, that's a problem. And that's a sign of a greater issue that has taken root maybe more than we even are anticipating right now. I think pretty quickly you should see change.
Yeah, it's a good point. Was this an infection that can be cleared up by the penicillin that is O'Brien, or is this going to linger? Is Nick Caley still on the staff, Phil?
He's not under contract for
the
2023 season. So,
did he go to the Shrine Bowl?
He's not listed as a Shrine Bowl participant for the Patriots coaching staff.
So you got a tight ends coach that needs to be filled, and you need Troy Brown is going to be your wide receivers coach. Those two positions are vital in terms of the timing. So I'm thinking Bill O'Brien and Troy Brown are critical in terms of getting married up before you even get to April, where they're having their first passing camps. So I don't know why I was thinking about it, but as you were talking about the timing, Troy Brown did not have, or at least his Chargers did not have, a good year. So they have to be way better at wide receiver. And to get there, the wide receivers coach and the offensive coordinator have to be on the same page to deliver it to the players. And if the players aren't taking it, sorry, I did a long wide receiver evaluation yesterday and I went into that. So, but we'll do that. We're going to do that on Tuesday, I think. We'll get into wide receiver evaluations and all that shit.
I like that. Just quickly on Caley, I don't think the door is slammed shut on a possible return to New England. I think it just depends on what happens some other places. For example, Jonathan Gannon, who's the defensive coordinator for the Eagles, I've been told if he ends up getting the job in Houston, there's an Ohio connection here between Nick Caserio, Jonathan Gannon, Nick Caley. Nick Caley could end up following Gannon to Houston as the next Texans offensive coordinator. So he might be kind of waiting on that front. Gannon's obviously still coaching in the playoffs right now. Also on the Caley front, he interviewed for the Jets offensive coordinator job, which as we're recording this podcast has been filled reportedly. The Jets are hiring former Broncos head coach Nathaniel Hackett as their offensive coordinator.
Oh, okay. Because I just said Nathaniel Hackett at the top of the pod, and if he was getting another head coaching job, I was like, holy shit. We got to throw the whole pot away. All right, good. As long as he's an offensive coordinator.
Does this mean, though, Tom, let's think Patriot-centrically here.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers to the Jets, because Nathaniel Hackett was Aaron Rodgers' offensive coordinator in Green Bay during MVP seasons. And now you've got a link there, and you've got a quarterback who might want to go, might like to be in a bigger market.
That's going to happen, Phil. So we're going to have Josh Allen, Mac Jones, Tua Tagovailoa, maybe Tom Brady if he lands there, or Lamar Jackson, and Aaron Rodgers. I am still on the Lamar Jackson to Miami train.
Sure. I think you should be. I know the Ravens have said he's 200% going to be their quarterback, but sorry, money talks. And unless they're going to actually pay the guy what he needs to re-sign, he's going to be a free agent.
For those of you who are viewing this podcast You saw me taking some drinks of my giant extra large morning coffee. I also have a water and a Kind bar on the way to pick up the coffee every day. So I've got a water and 23 ounces of coffee in me. And this has been a good pod, and we've been on for 34 minutes. So I'm going to put a cork in it, say goodbye to Phil, and go use the restroom.